Good morning and welcome to this media opportunity with members of the Return to Flight Task Group. We apologize for getting a little bit of a late start. Our meeting that we just concluded was running a bit long. To my immediate right is co-chairman of the Return to Flight Task Group, Mr. Dick Covey. To his right is the technical panel chairman, Mr. Joe Cozzopoli, and to his right is our management panel chairman, Dr. Dan Crippen. Jim Adamson, who is the operations panel chairman, unfortunately could not join us this morning. We'll begin with a brief opening statement from Mr. Covey, and then we'll take your questions.
Well, good morning, and thank you, Dave. For most of you that were able to participate in our public meeting, you know that today is wrapping up a three-day session that we've had as a plenary session for the Return to Flight Task Group. I'm not going to try to go over everything we went through in the public meeting. Hopefully most of y'all were able to hear that and participate in it. Would like to say that the task group has been active over the last several months in panel sessions, primarily work being done by the individual panels. And this was an opportunity for us to come together, hear some things together, and also share some of the things that we have been doing as individual panels. We will continue our work over the next several months, and a lot of our work is being paced by the progress that the agency makes, in particular space shuttle program, relative to the implementation of actions related to specific Accident Investigation Board recommendations. We do use their activities as a pacing item for us. We do try to maintain cognizance of the actions as they are, the things that they're doing as they proceed. That allows us then, when we come into a plenary session, to have a better sense of what to expect that we're going to hear from the agency. And that so far has proven to be a good way for us to work. With that, I think we'll go ahead and take questions.
Okay, thanks, Dick. Before we do, one thing I did forget to mention up front is at the end of the briefing, we'll be rolling some B-roll video from some of the panel visits, specifically to Southwest Research Institute a while back, Michoud Assembly Facility last week, and then there'll be some video from our plenary session and a little bit from today's public meeting. So if you wouldn't mind, please state your name and affiliation, and we'll begin with questions. Why don't we start with Marcia right here in the front.
Marcia Dunn, Associated Press, with a couple questions for Mr. Cozzopoli. The TPS instrumentation that was discussed, is it your understanding that it would be all over the orbiter or just in the sensitive areas like the wing leading edge? And would this be active throughout a flight or just during liftoff?
It's primarily will be on the leading edge of the wing. It's not going to be on the TPS, it's just the leading edge of the RCC. It'll be, yes, it will be completely active all the way through flight. As you know, as reported by Cy Rubenstein, this is still in the planning stage, but to answer your question, it's on the leading edge.
Is NASA giving thought to putting it into other critical areas like the doors, other areas that were discussed during the meeting?
I have not seen any of that at this point in time. So I would say the answer to that is no at this point in time.
And lastly, is there anything comparable to that up until now anywhere on the shuttle? Or is this some new technology that's been developed?
This instrumentation that we're talking about has been used before. So not on the shuttle, but it's been used before.
Mike Cabbage with the Orlando Sentinel for Mr. Covey and Mr. Cozzopoli. In listening to Ms. Clark's discussion this morning of TPS repair, it was unclear to me whether there was going to be a capability independent of station to repair tile and RCC when you returned the flight on the first mission. And I just wanted to make sure that, as you know, you could have a situation where an engine goes out and you don't reach your needed orbit or where you have damage after separating from the station from a micrometeoroid or whatever. And I just wanted to make sure that you did in fact plan to have that capability autonomous, independent of the station when you return to flight.
Well, let's see. Of course, you know, the agency's the one is off working what they're going to have, and not us, just to make that clear, Mike. But as I recall, the wording of the CABE recommendation is that it wanted to make sure that for station missions, which are return to flight, the STS-114, was that we had a capability that could include station, and the autonomous capability should follow. And yes, there is the risk area of what if your mission doesn't get to the station, you know, what can you do? And I'm sure that in the contingency planning, we will eventually see how NASA plans to deal with the contingency of not getting to the station and how they can accomplish at least as much as possible relative to inspection in that case.
Follow up?
Yes. So then your interpretation of that CABE recommendation is that the autonomous capability is to follow and that that is not a requirement for return to flight.
Yes. Joe, is that how you all?
That's the way I understand it at this time.
Right.
Yes.
Mark?
Mark Corot from the Houston Chronicle for Mr. Covey. Is it possible at this point in time for the task force or even you personally to assess the tentative planning dates for the first mission of September to October next year? Is that doable in your estimation, or do you see issues arising? And I have a follow-up.
Okay, well, you know, basically what we're looking at isn't necessarily what it takes to fly in September or October. We do get information and do get a sense of the activities that are in place and how they might be achievable or not achievable by September. And I don't think the Space Shuttle program thinks right now that they don't have some issues that are out there that may preclude being able to fly in the September to October window that they're using as kind of a planning date. It was clear to us that they have some things that they are still having to work to be able to meet that, but they have ways to work on them and at this point aren't saying they can't make it. And we haven't seen anything that says differently than what they've told us.
Okay, thank you. It seemed from the discussions this morning, obviously the RCC repair is one of those issues that's sort of a long pole. But I guess I'd like that assessment from you and your colleagues today. What do you see as the real long poles at this point in the effort?
Well, you're correct. It's the RCC repair. We have approximately three designs that we're looking at this point in time. NASA has not reached a point to say which one they're going to down select to. I believe it'll probably happen around the March time period that we'll be able to get a better, clearer feeling about where they're going with the RCC repair. But they're working very hard, and it is the long pole, one of the long poles. The second long pole, of course, is the boom that has got to be worked on for the inspection of both the tiles and the RCC. And again, that will probably is the two areas that I would think that NASA is saying is their long poles.
Mark Evangelista with the Clear Lake Citizen. My question is, with the amount of recommendations and requirements, new requirements that are coming out of these, out of the task force, out of this committee, how are you guys going to, are you guys going to add to the back room the amount of people that have to monitor all this information, people in the MER, people in Mission Control, and That's it.
Okay. Yeah, Mark, first, we're not going to determine what the requirements are that have to be met to support return to flight. We will look carefully and make an assessment of the actions that NASA takes, and that includes how the mission management team is trained and supported. I think that was the genesis of your question from the public meeting. So we're very interested in understanding that, because the ramifications of the CABE recommendation relative to mission management team training really says that we need to make sure that the changes are made to make the mission management team more effective and be able to manage the mission appropriately. Whether that's more resources, more data, or behavior, all those things probably tie together in what's being developed by the Space Shuttle program in a way that mission management team is going to work. Dan, do you have anything to add?
Our task, as we've defined it, certainly is to observe how NASA is responding to that recommendation and how all of the other inputs that are going to be provided now to the mission management team are incorporated. And we're going to do that largely through observing the simulations that will be taking place throughout the year of the MMT. They've already done a lot, as you know, in reorganizing and formalizing and adding members to it and other things. So now it becomes a matter largely of seeing the implementation through the simulations.
Mary Estacio, News 24, Houston. I think this question is directed to Mr. Crippen. Mentioned the technical engineering authority is in a very immature state, you said, or somebody said. I was wondering why exactly is the holdup? I mean, what's so difficult about establishing this?
Well, there are a number of options under consideration. What I can tell you at this point is that we were briefed yesterday of kind of where they think they might be headed ultimately. But the part that's difficult is I think you need to understand the CABE had in mind an independent technical authority specifically for the shuttle, but NASA believes that it's not only a good idea for the shuttle but a good idea agency-wide, and so they're taking this opportunity to implement it agency-wide as they implement the piece for the shuttle. So it will involve all of the centers. It involves headquarters, obviously, and as I suggested at one point this morning, this is a bit of a tricky business when you talk about independence and moving things from the program to somewhere else, and maybe to headquarters, because the lines of authority and accountability can easily get confused. So when you say that there is a central person, a headquarters, a line authority for, say, safety, what does that mean to the folks in the field? Obviously, they all have some responsibility for safety. But NASA is trying to be quite careful in how they construct it. And it is complicated enough, and Brian O'Connor is taking a good deal of time in working the issue with all of the centers, the invested people, and the programs. So it would be easier, I think, and you may have seen the solution by now, if they indeed had taken the narrow approach and said, we're just going to do an ITA for the shuttle. But instead, they're taking this opportunity to really advance that across the agency.
Okay, and I have just a supplemental question, totally different. Regarding the orbiter closeout photographs, it was mentioned that a more modernization of the drawing system will be long-term, down the line, implemented. Modernization, is that just, it's past just scanning these photographs or something? Is there going to be some added features that will be available to engineers?
Other than the digitized cameras that they will use, I don't know if any NASA is planning any other long-term implementation of that. I think the digitized camera will do the job for many years.
Mark Caro from the Houston Chronicle. I have a couple more. Were there deliberations on dealing with the numbers of waivers that are outstanding? That was a concern of the CABE in their investigation, that at some point, I don't think it was a return to flight, first flight issue, but a long-term issue to deal with the waivers. And I have a second question.
Well, see, let me take that. You know, that was not a specific return to flight activity, so it's outside the scope of what we would call our charter. However, we have been getting presentations on the actions that are being taken, and NASA is very aggressively going off and systematically addressing the waivers. that are in place. And so that's an ongoing activity. It's not directly tied to return to flight.
I have a question that I'll call maybe a little off the wall before I ask it, but I'm wondering if the task force would be capable, has discussed, or could be flexible enough to deal with something where you really needed to fly the shuttle to take care of an issue with the space station ahead of all the work that's been laid out. Has there been any sort of discussion or brainstorming about how you would deal with a situation where the space station needed some piece of equipment that couldn't be delivered without the space shuttle, and you had to make the decision to fly sooner than later?
Mark, we haven't addressed that specifically, but I'll tell you what we would do if that became a matter of urgency. Clearly, we're looking for NASA's implementation of the CABE recommendations and assessing that. Should they determine that they may have to fly before they could completely implement all the recommendations, then that would be something to come to us, and we would be able to, at least given a rationale for flying without implementing a recommendation, we would be able to assess that and render an opinion of whether that was the right thing to do or not. Dan?
Just a quick addition, Dick. I think it's important that we all keep in mind that we're an advisory panel and don't have the authority to start or stop a shuttle launch. And so something that was, if NASA deemed it necessary, we don't have the authority to say otherwise anyway. But I think as Dick described, we would be in a position to give them some advice.
Mike Cabbage with the Orlando Sentinel. I have a couple other questions myself. You mentioned an interim report in the public meeting a few minutes ago. I wonder if you could tell us a little about what, in general, that interim report is going to include, what sorts of things, who's drafting it, when you anticipate roughly it being ready.
Let's see. Our charter stated that we would issue a final report no later than 1 month before planned launch, and that we would issue interim reports when appropriate. Our interim report this time will very much mirror a lot of what you heard in the public meeting. It will be a status, and it'll be a status. We've basically the core part of the report has been written by each of the panels. It will go to the editorial subpanel being led by Dan, and within a cycle, since we're doing this for the first time, a cycle of review between all the panel members and the editorial subpanel, we will hopefully get that out within a short period of time, and short to me is if we get it out within a month, we'll be doing very well, and maybe sooner than that. We have the material. It's a little more detailed than maybe what was talked about today, but basically it'll be a report that formalizes the status of where we are right now.
And I'm curious as to how much interaction, if any, there is between the task group and the CABE. Do you regularly communicate with the CABE or members of the CABE to say, on recommendation X, what exactly were you guys looking for? What's the intent behind this language? Do you have a lot of communications with them, or are you pretty much interpreting that independently?
It's more toward the if we err on the side of trying to understand the CABE recommendations, we contact an appropriate member of the CABE and we have those discussions. We've had chances to interact in as panels, as individuals, and early on even in total as the entire task group. So where we need clarity, or if there's a question, we seek that from the CABE, and they've been very willing to help us understand.
I believe that the way we, as of yesterday, we talked to the CABE to get some clarification. Matter of fact, we got a letter this morning from someone who was on some duty over in Japan or somewheres, gave us a letter of clarification. So yeah, we're constantly, and we meet with them too.
Marcia Dunn, Associated Press. I'm not sure if it's for Mr. Covey or Mr. Cozzopoli. What for the RCC repair requirement for the next flight? I'm just looking for some clarity on what you see that as being. It's unclear to me whether there should be a real capability to fix an RCC hole, or whether would it be to fly the best project that you can test out that might or might not actually fix it for real. It's a little difference there, and I'm just trying to clarify in my own mind what's really needed for the next flight.
Well, at this time, NASA is trying to place into some requirements exactly what they need to cover in case there is another hit on the panels. And I've heard up to 14 inches of hole, for an example. And from anywhere from a quarter of an inch up to 14 inches of a hole. And the plan, the best we know at this point in time, is we need to carry aboard a fix for that. And the intent is by March or in that time period is to have that fix, and we're going to carry that fix on board. So there is no doubt that that's a return to flight issue that we need to resolve.
We're talking RCC here.
That's RCC.
14-inch RCC hole. Thank you. And secondly, I'm sorry.
It would not be inappropriate for the space shuttle program to be, looking at parallel paths of other alternatives to being, carrying an exact or something that they could guarantee would be a repair for the RCC. And so they are looking at other alternatives, and I'm sure that at some time they may bring those to us as if indeed they find that they're not going to be able to develop the material and the processes to repair RCC, that they might bring something forward as an alternative that would assure safe flight. And so the requirement is as we said, and that's the expectation that we have, is that we'll meet that requirement of the recommendation. Okay,
I guess I'm just sort of confused then. Can Atlantis fly without being able to actually fix a real RCC problem? I mean, before it can lift off, there has to be a real repair kit on board, not just something to test out and see on the little, the spacewalk little test. I mean, there needs to be a real fix.
To meet the intent of the CABE recommendation, yes.
Great. And my second question for Dr. Crippen is, I'm wondering the independent technical oversight, required by the board and which you want to see yourself. Does the new Langley Center meet that? Is that, in essence, can that be what the board had intended?
I think there are two questions there, but the answer, I think, will be the same for both. That is that the new National Engineering Center at Langley is not intended by NASA to be the answer to the Independent Technical Authority. It was developed before and is already up and running, as you may well know, and actually giving opinions and doing testing. It is a resource to be used by NASA, perhaps by the ITA, by the projects, to be a kind of center of excellence for engineering within NASA. So the ITA solution, if you will, response to that recommendation 751 will be different than, in addition to, the NESC.
I have a question. Actually, it's a two-parter regarding that impact sensing system. First of all, expound a little bit, if you can. I know it's not, the requirements are not solid on it yet, but is it going to determine whether or not the wing leading edge has been hit? Will it determine whether or not the extent to damage on the shuttle at that point? So, that it's kind of like, what exactly will it be able to determine? And second of all, you mentioned that the system has been used on other things, but you didn't say what those things were. Are they NASA aircraft? Were they DOD aircraft? Where have they been used before?
On the second question, I really don't know the answer to that. That's number one. Number two, again, on the RCC panel itself, this instrumentation is, again, it's going to be from one end of the wing all the way through the glove area, covering all these areas to measure exactly the impact. Did I answer your question on the first part properly?
Well, I was trying to figure out, is it going to determine the degree of damage or whether or not the...
That you got a hit.
That you got a hit, but not exactly what
no,
degree
no,
of damage.
That you got a hit.
Do we have any other questions? Okay. Seeing no other questions, thank you very much. We'll wrap this up, and in just a few minutes, we will roll some B-roll from the activities over the last several weeks. Thank you.